Greens. Some of my favorite greens include arugula, beet greens, collard greens, kale, black, green, or red, mesclun mix, which is assorted young salad greens, mustard greens, sorrel, spinach, Swiss chard, and turnip greens. The serving size is a cup of raw or a half cup of cooked, and I recommend every day to get 2 servings a day. Popeye was right when he bragged that he was strong to the finish because he ate his spinach. Dark green leafy vegetables are the healthiest food on the planet. As whole foods go, they offer the most nutrition per calorie. Just to emphasize the point, there was a study published in the journal Nutrition and Cancer entitled "Antioxidant, Anti-Mutagenic, and Anti-Tumor Effects of Pine Needles." Edible leaves in all their shapes and sizes, it seems, can be healthy foods. In 1777, General George Washington issued a general order that American troops should forage for wild greens growing around their camps, quote, "as these vegetables are very conducive to health and tend to prevent all putrid disorders," unquote. Since then, however, Americans have declared their independence from greens. Today, only about 1 in 25 even reach a dozen servings throughout the course of an entire month. I advise getting more than a dozen servings per week. A side note, an important caveat, greens and warfarin. In 1984, the tragic case of a 35-year-old woman unfolded when she failed to inform her physician about her change in diet. Because of her mechanical heart valve, the woman was on a blood-thinning drug called warfarin. But because she wanted to lose weight, she started eating a diet composed almost entirely of salad, broccoli, turnip greens, and mustard greens. 5 weeks later, she suffered a blood clot and died. If you're on the drug warfarin, also known as Coumadin, talk with your physician before you increase your greens intake. See, the drug works both as a rat poison and human blood thinner by crippling the enzyme that recycles vitamin K, which is involved in clotting your blood. So if your system gets an influx of fresh vitamin K, which is concentrated in greens, you can thereby undermine the effectiveness of the drug. You should still be able to eat your greens, but your physicians will have to titrate the dose of the drug to match your regular greens intake. Eating greens nearly every day may be one of the most powerful steps you can take to prolong your life. Of all the food groups analyzed by a group of Harvard University researchers, greens turned out to be associated with the strongest protection against major chronic diseases, including up to about a 20% reduction in risk of both heart attacks and strokes for every additional daily serving. Imagine if there was a pill that could prolong your life and only had good side effects. Everyone would be taking it, be making billions of dollars for the lucky drug company that created it. All health plans by law would have to cover it. People from every walk of life, every corner of the globe would be clamoring for it. But when that pill is just eat your greens, people lose interest. Drug companies have yet to patent broccoli, though Monsanto is trying. Doctors, however, don't have to wait for perky pharmaceutical sales reps to wine, dine, and cajole them into prescribing Pfizer brand spinach or GlaxoSmithKline brand collards. Here's my prescription for you. Greens, 2 servings by mouth daily, unlimited refill. If the full spectrum of colorful plant pigments are good for you, why are greens the healthiest? When autumn in New England becomes aflame with brilliant hues, where do those oranges and yellows come from? They were there all along, actually, just masked by the green pigment chlorophyll that starts to break down in the fall. Similarly, the dark green leaves of vegetables contain many of the other plant pigments all wrapped up into one package. As I mentioned, these colorful compounds are often the very same antioxidants implicated in many of the benefits of fruit and vegetable consumption. So in essence, when you eat your greens, you're eating the rainbow. A side note on how to regenerate coenzyme Q10 naturally. One of the reasons greens are some of the healthiest green light foods may be due to their green color. Decades ago, a search began for interceptor molecules that could serve as the body's first line of defense against cancer. The theory was that if we could find something that could tightly bind to carcinogens and prevent them from slipping into our DNA, we might be able to prevent some of the mutations that lead to cancer. After years of combing for the existence of such carcinogen-binding molecules, an interceptor was finally found. Chlorophyll, the most ubiquitous plant pigment in the world. It was right under our noses all along, providing we were eating healthfully. In a petri dish, certain DNA damage in human cells exposed to a carcinogen could be totally abolished by chlorophyll. But what about in people? In the name of science, volunteers drank a solution of radioactive aflatoxin, which is a carcinogen, with or without spinach chlorophyll. 6 cups of spinach worth of chlorophyll appeared to block about 40% of the carcinogen. Amazing, but that's not all that chlorophyll can do. In college, you learned that pretty much everything you were taught in high school biology wasn't actually true. Then in graduate school, you unlearn all the oversimplifications you learned in college. Just when you think you understand something in biology, it always seems a bit more complicated than you thought. For example, until recently, we assumed plants and plant-like organisms were the only ones that could directly capture and utilize the energy from the sun. Right? Plants photosynthesize, animals don't. That's because plants have chlorophyll and animals do not. Well, I mean, technically, you do have chlorophyll in your body, temporarily at least, after you eat greens. But it would seem there's no way the chlorophyll that enters your bloodstream after that salad could react with sunlight. After all, you know, light can't penetrate through your skin, right? Wrong. Right? Any kid who's shined a flashlight through his or her fingers could have told you that. The red wavelengths of sunlight do penetrate into your body. In fact, if you step outside on a sunny day, there's enough light reaching your brain that you could actually, you know, read a book inside your skull. Your internal organs are bathed in sunlight, along with any chlorophyll circulating in your bloodstream. Although any energy produced by the chlorophyll would be negligible, it turns out that light-activated chlorophyll in your body may help regenerate a critical molecule called coenzyme Q10. CoQ10, also known as ubiquinol, is an antioxidant. When ubiquinol extinguishes a free radical, it's oxidized to ubiquinone. To act as an effective antioxidant again, the body must regenerate ubiquinol from ubiquinone. Think of it like an electric fuse, right? Ubiquinol can only be used once before having to be reset. That's where sunlight and chlorophyll may come in. Researchers exposed some ubiquinone and dietary chlorophyll metabolites to the kind of light that reaches your bloodstream, and poof, coenzyme Q10 was reborn. However, without the chlorophyll or without the light, nothing happened. All along, we've been thinking that the main benefit of sunlight was only the formation of vitamin D, and the main benefit of greens was the antioxidants they contain. But now we suspect the combination of the two may actually help the body create and maintain its own internal stock of antioxidants. Eating a plant-based cholesterol-rich diet may be especially important for those on cholesterol-lowering statin drugs, as these medications can interfere with CoQ10 production. Green can taste great. I hope I've been able to convince you to eat greens as often as possible. The problem for many people is getting them to taste good. I'm afraid too many of us still suffer flashbacks from overcooked slimy green lumps on school cafeteria trays. Take kale, for example. Fibrous and grassy tasting, right? Kind of bitter, too. Some varieties are more palatable than others. In a good supermarket produce section, you may be able to find 3 types, green, black, and red. Nutritionally, the difference among them appear to be insignificant compared to how much of each you may be willing to eat. The healthiest kale is the one you'll eat the most of. I would suggest using black kale, also known as lacinato, dinosaur, or Tuscan kale, red kale, also found as red Russian kale, or baby kale, since these varieties are all milder and more tender than the more common mature green curly kale. Start by rinsing the leaves thoroughly under running water, then rip off the stems and tear the leaves into bite-sized pieces. Alternately, after the leaves are removed from their stems, you can roll them up and slice them into thin ribbons. If you want to make it even easier on yourself, just use whatever type you can find frozen. Frozen greens are cheaper, last longer, and come pre-washed and pre-chopped. There's a phenomenon called flavor-flavor conditioning, in which you can change your palate by linking a less pleasant flavor, for instance sour or bitter, with a more pleasant one, say sweet. For example, when researchers tried adding sugar to sour grapefruit juice, people liked it better, no surprise. But within a few days, the study subjects began to like even unsweetened grapefruit juice more than they did before the experiment started. In fact, this reconditioning of the palate lasts for at least weeks after the sugar was removed. The same happens when researchers dip or spritz broccoli with sugar water or aspartame. I know that sounds gross, but they're not actually making the broccoli taste sweet. The added sweetness merely masks the bitterness by fooling your taste buds. This is why the so-called secret ingredient in many collard green recipes is a spoonful of sugar. I mean, certainly if there was ever a food to justify the use of yellow or red light condiments to boost consumption, it would be the single healthiest of all foods, greens. I use a balsamic glaze, even though it has some added sugar in it. It'd be healthier, though, to add green light sweetness in the form of something like, you know, figs or grated apples. The sweetness trick is why green smoothies can be so delicious, if not a little odd-looking. Smoothies can be a great way to introduce greens into children's diets. The basic triad is a liquid, ripe fruit, and fresh greens. I'd start with a 2-to-1 ratio of fruits to greens to start with before tipping heavier toward greens on the scale. So, for example, 1 cup of water, a frozen banana, a cup of frozen berries, and a cup of packed baby spinach would be a classic green smoothie 101. I like to add fresh mint leaves as well for a boost of flavor and even more greens. Fresh herbs can be expensive at the store, but mint can grow like a weed in your yard or in a pot on your windowsill. Eating greens for breakfast can be as delicious as mint chocolate oatmeal, a cooked oatmeal, chopped mint leaves, cocoa powder, and a healthy sweetener, which I'll talk about later. When you're thinking about ways to pair your greens with something you already love to make the greens more palatable, consider mixing them with a green light source of fat, nuts, seeds, nut or seed butters, or avocados. Many of the nutrients greens are famous for are fat-soluble, including beta-carotene, lutein, vitamin K, and zeaxanthin. So pairing your greens with a green light source of fat may not only make them taste better, but will maximize nutrient absorption. This can mean enjoying a creamy tahini-based dressing on your salad, putting walnuts in your pesto, or sprinkling some toasted sesame seeds on your sautéed kale. The jump in nutrient absorption is no small effect. When researchers tried feeding people a healthy salad of spinach, romaine, carrots, and tomatoes, along with a source of fat, there was an impressive spike in carotenoid phytonutrients in their bloodstream over the next 8 hours. With a fat-free dressing, carotenoid absorption flatlined down to negligible amounts. It was as if they had never eaten a salad at all if you just looked at their blood. Similarly, by adding some avocado to your salsa may triple the amount of fat-soluble nutrients that make it into your bloodstream, in this case the lycopene in the tomatoes. It doesn't take much, just 3 grams of fat in an entire hot meal may be sufficient to boost absorption. That's just a single walnut, or a spoonful of avocado or shredded coconut. Snack on a few pistachios after a meal, and you're all set. The greens and source of fat just have to end up in your stomach at the same time. Another way to remove bitterness from greens is to blanch or boil them, but unfortunately this works by leaching some of the healthy compounds into the cooking water. And if you're making soup, not a problem, right? Because the nutrients aren't destroyed as much as they are displaced. If the cooking liquid is poured off, however, you could be losing some nutrition. But even if 50% of those healthy compounds goes down the drain, if the decreased bitterness motivates you to eat twice as many greens, problem solved. Whenever I'm boiling pasta, for example, I'll add a bunch of fresh greens to the pot a few minutes before I'm ready to drain the pasta. I know I'll be losing some nutrients when I pour off the cooking water, but it's worth it for me for the convenience of throwing everything into one pot and getting my family to eat even more greens. Try to incorporate greens into as many meals as possible. I put just about everything I eat on a bed of greens. That way, the greens take on the flavor of the rest of the dish. However, if you want to eat cooked greens straight, you can try adding lemon juice, flavored vinegars, Red pepper flakes, garlic, ginger, low-sodium soy sauce, or caramelized onions. I personally like mine hot, sweet, smoky, and salty. I use hot sauce for heat, balsamic glaze for sweetness, and both smoked paprika and liquid smoke. For saltiness, I used to be fond of a soy sauce substitute called Bragg Liquid Aminos until I got more serious about cutting down my sodium intake. The best sodium-free salt substitute I've been able to find is something called Table Tasty. There are whole grocery aisles full of prepared sauces with which you can experiment. Most have added salt, oil, or sugar, so I try to reserve them for exceptionally healthy foods. Mixing yellow or red light foods together, like dipping your fries and McNuggets into barbecue sauce, may just add insult to injury, but I wouldn't eat half as many baked rosemary sweet potato fries if I weren't dipping them in hot sauce spiked ketchup. And if there were ever an excuse to dip out of the green light zone, it would be for green leafy vegetables. During my bachelor days, I would regularly order Chinese food for delivery, usually broccoli and garlic sauce, hold the white rice. Then I'd throw brown rice or quinoa along with dried lentils into my rice cooker and steam or microwave a pound of greens. By the time the delivery person arrived, everything was all ready, and I could just mix it all together and have more than enough for leftovers. You can also find prepackaged pouches of Indian food online or at Indian or natural food markets. Again, I use them as sauces rather than eat them as a meal in themselves. My favorite is spinach dal. That way I'm eating greens in a green sauce. That's like the kale pesto principle. I use one green, basil, to make the other green, kale, taste better. A side note on the health benefits of vinegar. Vinegar may be one condiment that's good for you. Randomized controlled trials involving both diabetic and non-diabetic individuals suggest that adding 2 teaspoons of vinegar to a meal may improve blood sugar control, effectively blunting the blood sugar spike after a meal by about 20%. So adding vinegar to potato salad or to rice, like Japanese do to make sushi rice, or dipping bread in balsamic vinegar, may blunt the effects of these high glycemic foods. We've known about the anti-glycemic effect of vinegar for more than 25 years, but we're still not sure of the mechanism. Originally, it was thought that vinegar slowed stomach emptying, but even consuming vinegar outside of meals appears to help. Type 2 diabetics, consuming 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar at bedtime, for example, were found to wake up with better blood sugars in the morning. Consuming pickles or vinegar pills does not seem to have the same effect. Do not, however, drink vinegar straight, as it can burn your esophagus, or in excess. A cup a day for 6 years, that's 2,000 cups of vinegar, was discovered to be a bad idea in a case report in the medical literature. Vinegar may also help with polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, improve arterial function, and help reduce body fat. A single tablespoon of apple cider vinegar restored ovarian function within a few months in 4 out of 7 women with PCOS. A tablespoon of rice vinegar was found to acutely improve artery function in postmenopausal women. We're not sure why, but the acetate from the acetic acid in vinegar may lead to improved nitric oxide production. Such an effect would be expected to help with hypertension, and indeed there was a study purporting to show blood pressure benefits from a tablespoon of vinegar a day. Despite folk wisdom to the contrary, vinegar does not appear to be an effective treatment for head lice, but it may help with weight loss. A double-blind, placebo-controlled, but vinegar company-funded study was performed, in which obese subjects consumed daily vinegar drinks with either 1 or 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar or a placebo drink that tasted like vinegar but contained no acetic acid. Both vinegar groups lost significantly more weight than the control group, though the effect was modest, about 4 pounds over a 3-month period. CT scans showed that the vinegar group subjects lost a significant amount of their visceral fat, the abdominal fat that's particularly associated with chronic disease risk. There are all sorts of flavorful, exotic vinegars to explore these days, including fig, peach, pomegranate. I encourage you to experiment and find ways to incorporate some into your diet. Salad days. Having a big salad every day is a great way to burn through the daily dozen. To a base of mesclun greens and arugula, I add tomato, red bell peppers, beans, and barberries, along with toasted nuts if I'm using a fat-free dressing. My current favorite dressing recipe is a Caesar spin-off shared by Dr. Michael Clapper from the True North Health Center. I've included the recipe in the PDF accompanying the audiobook, but basically it's 2 tablespoons of almond meal, 3 cloves of crushed garlic, 3 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 3 tablespoons of nutritional yeast flakes, 2 tablespoons of white miso, 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, and a 1/3 cup of water. And you blend it all together and enjoy. And if you have one of these high-speed blenders, you could probably just use whole walnuts instead of ground walnuts or walnut meal. Baby spinach may have higher levels of phytonutrients than mature spinach leaves, but what about really baby spinach, so-called microgreens, the seedlings of vegetables and herbs? A nutritional analysis of 25 commercially available microgreens found that they did have significantly higher nutrient densities. For example, red cabbage microgreens have a 6-fold higher vitamin C concentration than mature red cabbage and nearly 70 times the vitamin K. But they're eaten in such micro quantities that even the healthiest upscale restaurant garnish probably isn't going to do much for you. If, however, you want to grow your own, you could have rotating trays of microgreens that you snip off with scissors for probably the healthiest salad out there. On a lecture tour, I once stayed with someone who did just that, and I've been jealous ever since. Microgreens are the perfect plants for the impatient gardener, fully grown in just 1 or 2 weeks. A side note on the one green to avoid. Although greens are the healthiest of foods, there's one greens I would caution against eating: alfalfa sprouts. Over a dozen years, 28 outbreaks of salmonella food poisoning linked to sprouts have been documented in the United States, affecting 1,275 people. Of course, salmonella-tainted eggs sicken an estimated 142,000 Americans every year, but that doesn't make it any less tragic for those hospitalized and killed in sprout breaks. Alfalfa sprout seeds have all sorts of microscopic nooks and crannies where bacteria from manure-contaminated irrigation water can hide, so even home-sprouted alfalfa seeds should not be considered safe. I'll never forget a presentation I gave in Boston once. It was in game show-style format in which contestants from the audience tried to rank from healthiest to unhealthiest the foods I'd brought with me. There was a lively cacophony of conflicting advice shouted from the crowd. You can imagine the groans when I revealed that alfalfa sprouts, a quintessential health food, belonged way at the top of the foods to avoid list. Later that night, I was stuck with the sprouts after all the healthier and yummier items had been given away as prizes. I just told my audience not to eat them, but I hate wasting food. In a do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do moment, I added them to my salad that night. Yes, they'd been sitting in the car all day and on stage for hours. Yes, they were on the top of my game show's list of foods you should not eat. But, I mean, what were the odds that this one particular package was contaminated? I went back to work the next day at the New England Medical Center emergency room, not as a physician, but as a patient with salmonella food poisoning. So other than the dreaded alfalfa sprout, greens truly are the healthiest foods on the planet. You simply can't do better in terms of nutrition per calorie. Explore, innovate, taste test, play, and teach your palate to enjoy them, whether you sneak them into a refreshing smoothie, incorporate them to sauces and dressings, use them as a base for main dishes, or eat them straight in a big, vibrant salad. Just do it. Your body will thank you with every bite of greens you take.